This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Fox News Podcasts presents the Brett Baer Podcast with Fox News Chief Political Anchor, Brett Baer.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning into this exclusive edition of the Brett Baer Podcast. Joining us today, Nick Clegg, former British Deputy Prime Minister, current President for Global Affairs for Facebook parent company Meta. Thanks for being here.
Good evening. It's good to be with you.
So, you are ending the suspension of former President Trump on Facebook and Instagram. Why are you doing that now? And explain what's behind it.
So he was suspended for 2 years from using Facebook and Instagram, and that two-year clock expires now this month. And so we're confirming that if he wants to, he can, in the coming weeks, he can use Facebook and Instagram again. I mean, of course, there are guardrails, there are rules. He's got to play by the rules. And we're announcing some additional ones today to encourage him to stick to the rules that exist when people use Facebook and Instagram. So they can't be misused. But look, at the end of the day, we believe the American people should hear from, including on our apps and services, from those who want to lead them. And he's a former president of this country, vying to be a candidate for the next presidential elections. And we don't really want to, all other things be equal, stand in the way. So we're trying to strike the right balance between allowing that open debate to occur, whilst at the same time making sure that Instagram and Facebook is not used to, create real-world harm. And that's reflected in what we're confirming and announcing today.
Yeah, so just to tell people, and Trump supporters were, I guess they were surprised at the extent of the suspension. They looked back at January 6th and the posts and what he said, and they always took away, these are the supporters, the peace message that he was giving. How did you get to the suspension that you got to?
Well, look, we're not alone in this. Consider the events on January 6th to have been very serious, the violence in the Capitol to be exceptionally serious, and the praise that former President Trump expressed for those who were on the Capitol and involved in that violence was something that we did not think was right, which we didn't want to see on our services, and it led to that two-year suspension. But that mm-hmm. suspension has now come to an end. So the question really now is, what do we do going forward? And we think that the kind of issues or the threat to public safety have significantly receded compared to, those days. I mean, remember, back then, Washington, D.C. was under curfew. Government offices across the country were closed or under heavy security. The National Guard was being called out in one state after the next. That, thankfully, is no longer the case. The midterm elections, which are the last big electoral test that we can kind of look at to measure how, things are working out, went off, thankfully, peacefully, and there wasn't widespread violence and so on, disruption. So we think it's right to let the two-year suspension now expire. It's up to him and his team. If he wants to use Facebook and Instagram, he's now free to do so. Mm-hmm. But we're very clear, we want him to play by the rules which apply to everybody who uses Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, and listen, we've learned a lot about what the former president, then president, did on January 6th and did not do. I don't want to go too down far down this road, but on Facebook, he posted on that day, "I'm asking everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful, no violence. Remember, we are the party of law and order, respect the law, and our great men and women in blue. Thank you." He posted, "We have to have peace, go home." I guess I look at you look at other people who maybe still didn't get suspended on Facebook or Instagram who have done or said other things. And I'm just trying to get a sense of where the community standards are for political speech and what you took from that day on that decision.
Yeah, I mean, like you, I don't think it helps to go through each and every single post that appeared that day. There are other posts which had a much more, at best, ambivalent message of support for those who did, you know, indulge in exceptional violence at the centre of American democracy on that day. But where we draw the line is, as a general principle, we're a private company, we're a private tech company, we're not a political entity. We don't try and make decisions which sort of, you know, help or hinder one side or the other. We believe in free and open debate, particularly in the world's most powerful democracy, the United States. And we believe that the American people should be able to hear from their leaders or those who want to be their leaders. We just kind of don't want, I think not unreasonably enough, for people to abuse the use of Facebook and Instagram in a way that would lead to real-world harm. Now, I accept this is difficult because right now in the United States, there's roughly half the country that think that companies like Meta should censor more content, and roughly the other half who think that we take down too much content. I totally accept that there is no decision that we can make that is going to keep everybody happy. We're trying to strike the right balance between free expression, free and open political debate, whilst at the same time making sure that for all the users who use Facebook and Instagram, it's an enjoyable experience. It's one where politics doesn't completely overwhelm their time on social media, and that our apps are not used to create or incite real world harm.
When it comes to elections, obviously, there are all kinds of questions about the use of Facebook. And you know, we saw it in 2016, 2020, and there are all kinds of questions on Capitol Hill about that. But as far as stories, the Hunter Biden laptop story, the story of the COVID origins, did Facebook manipulate those or censor those as they were coming out?
So on the Hunter Biden story, other platforms, I think it was Twitter, sort of just deleted the story altogether. We didn't. You could still find the story. Millions of people did. But for 7 days, the prominence of the story was less for those 7 days. It's just part of the way our systems work to allow our fact checkers. We have a network of independent fact checkers to look at the story if they wanted to. They didn't, and after 7 days, that what's called in the jargon that temporary demotion was taken off. So we didn't remove it. People could find it. Many people saw it on Facebook. We have this system which works on a whole bunch of content temporarily meant that it was not circulating as widely as it otherwise would for those seven day period, and then it was widely seen in the normal way. After that 7 day period, that's what we did. That's in keeping with what we've always done, particularly with our fact checking system. I accept that people should scrutinize that and ask questions of that. But we were not trying to kind of randomly censor content for any kind of political purpose. We were simply following the rules by which our systems currently operate.
We've seen Twitter in these Twitter file stories with extensive coordination with the federal government over political speech. How extensive was Facebook or Meta's coordination? And should the federal government have influence over speech on your platforms?
So, look, if I understand it correctly, the Congress is going to look into this, look into, the way that the executive branch does or doesn't try to kind of, shape how companies operate. And, that seems to me completely right. That's the way the balance of power should work. And I don't really want to comment on that. But on behalf of Meta, we don't operate at the behest of what governments just sort of tell us from one moment to the next. Part of my job is to interact with governments day in, day out around the world. And I can tell you, most of the time, they're immensely frustrated that we don't do what they tell us. Of course, you know, they're free to reach out to us. We need to work with governments, and we are a law-abiding company around the world. But at the end of the day, we try and be crystal clear about where we draw the line, about what we think is and is not acceptable on Facebook and Instagram. We don't do that because we're instructed to do so by governments. We do that as much as we can in line with our own values, a belief in free expression, in self-expression, but also in making sure that people have a safe and enjoyable experience when using Facebook and Instagram. And, I think there are numerous incidents where, far from any kind of suggestion that we are trying to kind of collude or act at the behest of government instructions, there's just often quite a lot of frustration from governments, including in DC, that we don't do what they want. I kind of think that's the kind of natural push and pull of these things. As for what governments intend to do and how the Congress wants to scrutinise that, that seems to me that's way beyond my remit and our role in Meta, and that's for Congress and for the executive branch to sort out amongst themselves.
Well, Congress is clearly going down that road. I don't know what it's going to look like, but there is a concern up on Capitol Hill about damage social media does to young kids. I'm wondering your thoughts about that. You have kids. Do you limit social media use of your own kids?
I mean, look, every parent is different. I just make sure, like all parents, and you try and do this with monosyllabic, grumpy teenagers in particular, you try and keep up, you try and keep the channels of communication open so they talk to you about what they're looking at. I think it's, we have on Facebook and Instagram now much, much better parental controls. So particularly for teens, parents, obviously with the consent of the teens, can really see exactly who they're communicating with, what kind of content they're looking at. And also we have new systems where the technology is improving all the time. So if a teenage girl, for instance, is looking at the same kind of content on Instagram all the time, we basically nudge them and say, hey, maybe it's time to now look at something else, or maybe it's just time to take a break altogether. We're giving more and more data to researchers to look at the effect of social media on adolescents in particular. So, look, all of us want the same thing. All of us want the same thing, is that when youngsters use social media, they use it for the good, and there's a lot of good on social media for youngsters. They can communicate with their friends, they can develop their own identity, they can find out new things, whilst, of course, shielding them from the harms. And we totally accept that this is a wholly legitimate area of scrutiny and questioning from Congress. We understand we have heavy responsibilities in this area, but we are constantly improving and investing in our systems to deliver exactly what I think most people want, which is an enjoyable and safe experience for teens on social media.
All right, we're going to take a quick pause here. We'll be back after this.
Did you know that every major diaper company either financially or vocally supports abortion? If that appalls you and you're looking to support a baby brand that aligns with your pro-life, pro-family views, then Every Life is your solution. Every Life firmly believes that regardless of where someone is from, what they look like, or whether they were planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle from God worthy of love, protection, and celebration. Every Life offers high-performing, supremely soft, premium diapers and wipes delivered right to your doorstep. Their diapers are crafted without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. And you can feel good knowing that every purchase with Every Life contributes to changing lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is not just changing diapers, they're changing lives. Visit everylife.com to learn more. That's everylife.com. And don't forget to use promo code Duffy10 for an exclusive 10% discount on your first order today.
Things are happening quickly. Artificial intelligence is moving forward. Is AI dangerous? Do you think that should be regulated? There's a lot of questions about where the future goes on this front.
Well, look, I think AI is one of the most transformational technologies that's out there at the moment. And certainly, if you look at a business like Meta, AI touches every aspect of what we do. In fact, some of the things we've just talked about, you know, it is AI systems that are increasingly sophisticated at identifying content which might be damaging to youngsters. Without AI, we wouldn't be able to keep teens safe when using our apps. But at the end of the day, you know, AI systems are just very powerful sort of pattern recognition systems, but they will be used increasingly across the industry. Questions will be asked by regulators and legislators around the world. We, of course, will always fall in line with legislation that is adopted by democratically elected legislatures around the world. But, you know, I hope at the same time people also recognise that the United States is a world leader in this. And, you know, there are other countries like China where they have very different principles and values about data privacy and data protection and how AI systems are used. And the, you know, the world-beating excellence of US industries using AI is a real crown jewel, if I could put it like that, for the US, which I hope will be safeguarded into the future as well.
I want to ask you about the business and layoffs recently in the tech world. You've had some recent layoffs, Microsoft 10,000, Amazon 18,000, you all 11,000, Twitter 3,700. Obviously, during COVID, it changed. A lot of people were 100% using social media and numbers were going through the roof. You see a slowdown? Is this the end of the layoffs? What do you think going forward?
Well, I see two things. Firstly, you're right. The whole industry, or most of the industry at least, appeared to, with hindsight, with the wisdom of hindsight, kind of overhire during the pandemic. I think a lot of people assumed, wrongly as it turns out, that the massive shift to, you know, online behavior and life in the pandemic would somehow kind of carry on after the pandemic. But of course, people have gone back, thankfully, much more to their kind of normal lives. I mean, some things have changed for good, but it wasn't the permanent step change that many people anticipated. So we've had to course correct for that. But speaking, you know, for Meta in particular, I'm not in a position to judge about the industry as a whole. For us, this is an ongoing process. I mean, we are really, you know, leaning into driving greater efficiency through the way in which we do things, you know, doing the right thing, but with leaner resources, making sure that teams are really focused on priorities, and that's an ongoing, you know, it's an ongoing process. So for us, it wasn't just something which we announced one day and, alas, had to let go of a number of colleagues and fellow employees. It's actually part of a process where we really are seeking to remold the company, really, to be leaner and more efficient and more focused on the real priorities that the business faces.
You know, Forbes was really tough on you last year, saying that this is a quixotic quest, going down the virtual reality stuff. Meta finished down today in the markets, and you've had operating losses 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022 for $30 billion plus. What is the vision? You know, believe that everybody is going to be in this virtual reality kind of world going forward?
I think the vision is this. At the moment, we all, you do it, I do it, everybody's watching this program does it. You just spend your whole life walking around with a mobile phone in the palm of your hand. I mean, we just live via our phones. The vision is that is not the end of technological development, that eventually we will move to wearing something on the bridge of our nose, just like billions of people wear spectacles, and that there is new technology, optical technology, which means we will communicate with each other rather than staring at a screen on a phone. We'll be able to see each other as an avatar, as a hologram, through the lenses we have, you know, on our faces, and that will provide a sense of presence, sort of immersive presence, that even if you are geographically very far apart, you feel as if you're kind of breathing the air in the same room with someone else. Now, look.
Let me interrupt, Nick. Let me interrupt. I want to play this video because my family went to the Meta offices and
right.
You gave us a little tour of the Meta Quest Pro, the new virtual reality goggles. And we went and, you know, really experienced some interesting stuff, and it was great. My kids loved the games. I played golf. They flew around as Iron Man. My wife was boxing. Very cool stuff. But for me, are you thinking that my age is going to do this in virtual reality conference rooms? Or are you looking at my kids saying those are the people that we are going to get in the long term? Is that the business model?
Look, firstly, this doesn't happen overnight. It takes a while before people get used to new technology, new ways of communicating with each other. These things don't happen overnight. These are major, major investments. I mean, the holy grail, if you like, is augmented reality, where you can really kind of feel that you're in the physical environment that you find yourself in, but you can augment that with sort of whole digital world that you can overlay on it, a sort of mixed reality, if you like, plus. That will rely on technologies which haven't yet been fully developed. They're still, you know, reliant on technologies which have been developed in the lab by research scientists. So we've got a long way to go. But in terms of the long-term direction, we believe that generally people use technology where it is available to them to communicate with other human beings, even at a great distance, in a way where they feel they really are in each other's presence, where there's a sort of sense of presence and immediacy and intimacy, even though you're geographically far apart. That's what people did when they first could use a telephone, when they could first send an email, when they could first use social media. In that sense, it's just part of the evolution of communication technology. It's the natural next step in all of that, but it's going to take a while. And you're right that, you know, youngsters jump into this world much more quickly, I guess, than other folk do. Gaming is always a kind of leading use case. Fitness apps, you said your wife enjoyed that, is also a growing thing. But over time, that will change. I use, for instance, something that we have, it's called Workrooms. I sit in a virtual conference room with my team every Monday morning, and we meet, even though my team is distributed around the world, for an hour every Monday, and we feel as if we're sitting next to each other. It's a great experience, and I think that's the kind of thing that is going to grow and develop over time.
Last thing, you're now in this world. You were in the government world before. Do you think that big tech, Meta, Twitter, others, are the black hat for governments, that they're going to come after you because of concerns they have about privacy and kids and other things? Do you fear that that's coming in really in earnest?
Look, I just think it's one of these things that you see, these big mood swings. That a few years ago, tech and social media, it was all brilliant, it was great. The time of the Arab Spring, that was because of social media. Social media could do no wrong. All the leaders in Silicon Valley, you know, walked on water. A big swing against it now. And I think both those swings, by the way, are often exaggerated. Then, you know, social media is not the reason for everything that's good in the world, and it's not the reason for everything bad in the world either. And I think what you're seeing as that kind of mood swing is happening from tech, you know, optimism and utopianism to tech pessimism, is that a lot of governments around the world, you look in Europe, you look in India, you look in Australia, you look in the UK, look at all the congressional debates in DC, are thinking about what role they should play in putting down some rules of the road, some putting down some new guardrails by which companies like Meta should operate. And look, I think that's kind of inevitable, that the technology erupts first, and then some years later, everyone looks at the pros and cons of the technology, and government wants to get in on the act as well. My hunch is that some of that regulation will make a lot of sense and is necessary, but some of it probably will be misplaced and won't stand the test of time. That's the nature of regulation. I really hope these great American companies won't be overregulated in the process, because if I look at the great competition that we face from, you know, Chinese tech companies, the might of these world-beating American companies is something which I, you know, believe that the U.S. should be very proud of.
Nick Clegg, we really appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you.
You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. We'll see you next time.
from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.